This is War Room Moments, the show that takes you around the world to share interviews with some of the most successful and most relevant people on the planet, hear their stories, and get the most important business lessons they have learned on their road to success, and get exclusive advice on how to implement their success into your life and business. War Room Moments is brought to you by the Strategic Advisor Board. Here's your host, Jason Miller.
All right. Well, hey, welcome to the War Room today. I got the Foo on today. With me today, a fellow businessman, veteran, and a good friend. And welcome to the show, man. I think this is about a year and a half ago.
Yeah, second time.
Yeah,
and I'm excited to get into it. I mean, I saw that you were like, hey, I'm opening the calendar. I was like, you know what? I haven't talked to Jason in a long time. We both have grown a lot. I mean, you as a host now, and me too, and now as a guest, right? Like, we both have evolved a lot in the last year and a half. So I wanted to get back into the war room.
Yeah, man. Yeah. I still remember. I remember my first podcast I ever did and how it was just this very structured thing. And, you know, looking back on that very first episode and how different the show is today is pretty amazing. And then I go all the way back to your first show on MBC on Fire or something.
Fire Up Connect,
right? And I will say, man, as a human being, you have like had exponential growth. Oh my God, it's amazing. For sure.
Thank you. So, thank you for that. I mean, that was what kicked off this venture. I mm-hmm. paid for the radio time, so to have some radio time to get it was covered by NBC and a KCAA radio in Orange County, big population. So I was like, okay, let's try this out. And then I was like, well, I'm paying for this, I don't own any of this. And then I got Saab, you know, I got you, and then I got another round of the directors, and then we were like, I think it was like almost at the same time. We've been thinking about podcasts, kind of loosely mentioning it. And then after we did that, those interviews, like, you know what? Like, we can do it even better than that. So let's do the podcast ourselves. And you invited me to be a host. And I was excited about it. I was just very, I felt eager or I don't say alago. I don't know why that part doesn't want to come out in English, but I wanted to be part of that, and you made me part of that, and now we're in the top 1%, so I'm excited for that.
Yeah, I think 720 posted today, and that was yours, one of yours posted today. Oh. Episode yeah, 720, year and a half, 720 episodes. No, we're just coming up on 2 years, I think.
Yeah. 2 years. The 2 year anniversary is coming up.
Yeah, so. We're doing a 2 year anniversary podcast, I think. So
yeah, it's in like 2 weeks, I think.
Yeah, so. Something like that. But yeah, really cool stuff. And you know, I obviously know you. So, but the audience might not know you very well. So why don't you just do a little 30-second soundbite, introduce yourself and what your superpower is.
So my name is James Foo Torres, but I go by Foo, which is the first part of my last name. I'm originally from Puerto Rico, got recruited with the Air Force, and that's how I got to the States. And that's the connection that I got with Jason. We're both veterans, and just, I don't think I was even like a year in when I met Jason, and I was doing public relations. And then as I met Jason and met other people, I evolved to become more of a strategist. And, then now I was a fractional CMO, a marketing advisor. I help specifically tax professionals, but this model also applies for any service provider to go from service providers to a trusted business advisor. So basically what I did with myself of going from seeing as the public relations guy to move into more a marketing advisor where I can grow companies rather than just staying in my lane, so to speak, and just in the PR side. PR is something that I do and I will do forever. I have the connections and everything, but it's such a limiting space that I decided to expand, and it's been life-changing.
Well, yeah, I mean, I've watched your journey over the last couple of years, and I think it's important to note that a lot of people fall in love with the idea of business, and a lot of people make it look really easy, right? And the truth is it sucks a good majority of the time, right? It's a fight, it's a battle, it's a war all the time to continue to trudge up that hill and climb up that hill and all those things. And I mean, I'm still doing it, and I've got, I'm probably leaps and bounds ahead of 98% of the SMBs out there, but I'm still doing it. So that just goes to show you that never ends, right? And just watching you progress through what you're doing, is a testament to, you just got to keep putting one foot in front of the other, right? All the time. But I'm curious though, as to your family life. Did you come from entrepreneurship in your background, your family?
My grandpa
Okay.
was a business owner. It was mainly some mix between bar and restaurant. It was designed for like 45 plus, so to speak, like in that area where they didn't put like reggaeton or hip hop or like the things for the young people, because she's like, yeah, I don't want people to come here and shoot themselves, blah, blah, right? Because they didn't want that kind of crowd. So I was exposed to that. And then my uncle, which is my dad's or my mom's brother, he also has his own company of security. It's like fire alarm, security cameras. That's his company. So I saw them and I was like, I know that I wanted to be a business owner. And I ended up going through like traditional education for the most part, because that's what my family really wanted me to do. And I was like, well, I'll do engineering, and then from there I'll create a business. I'll just kind of use that as a way to have some background on something, right? And basically that's what I ended up doing, and which is pretty cool, you know.
So was that a, I mean, do you look at that as it was a pretty big influence? Because like I know in my life, I grew up very entrepreneurial, and my dad owned a farm, my mom owned a, restaurant, clothing store, video store, small town of 1,000 in Montana. And it kind of got printed on me as a young kid. And I didn't necessarily know that for sure. Then going into the military and spending all those years in the military, but then having that itch constantly, thumping on my head all the time and saying, God, you've got to do something more, right? So do you find that was an experience you had too, or what caused the itch for you?
For me was I didn't feel like I fit in on the different jobs that I took. And in the military, I love serving, and I'm proud of everything that I did and of the opportunities that they gave me. And I was able to become independent and all that, and exposed me to a lot of things. And I love the veteran community. But I didn't feel like it was fulfilling. This is a good job for now, but it's not fulfilling me. And that's looking, I mean, being of this generation where I'm a millennial, 30 years old. So from there was no internet to now there's internet to now even AI, right? Like, just kind of arrived to be democratized. So when I was seeing in the internet all these people that making money online, I was like, look, I'm always online because I'm part of the generation where like we're always online. So I if other people have done it, I know I can figure it out. So that was the thing. It's like I have the background of, I know that if my uncle and my grandparents, which I know so well, that I'm like, I know that I'm even smarter not to, because I've been more educated, all that stuff, like my generation and everything. So it's like, if they figure it out, I know I can figure it out. And I'm gonna do it my way, which that's the online space. And I don't wanna keep it online, but at least have the flexibility to do it if I want to.
Yeah. Reminds me of what you just said, "Do It My Way." The song "I Did It My Way" by Frank Sinatra, right? And I've always like had that attitude of not that I don't take advice from people, but stuff like that. But then I take that advice in and do it my way, right? And project out my way of doing things. And I think that's a huge strength that, you know, more people should embrace that and not the sheep's mentality of just following along, right? There's nothing wrong with that, but I choose to be a wolf, not a sheep, and do things my way. But do things my way based off of not recreating the wheel either. So I think that's important. And I think that's a good conversation to segue into, is not recreating that wheel. For sure. So what's your thoughts there on that?
I follow you. I follow Alex Hormozi. I follow even David Meltzer that you just had on the show, the last episode that you released, actually, at least at the time of this recording. And I take all the lessons that they learned from, like David Meltzer from losing $100 million, Alex Hormozi lost everything twice and all that stuff, and I want to take the lessons to accelerate my progress and learn from their mistakes. But ultimately, I filter all their advice, and I don't take anybody as they're right on everything. I mean, I take things from the things that are serving me from different people. I filter them through my authentic authority. That's how I call it, like my filter. And then I do it my way, right? Kind of like I was talking, and I don't take everything from one person. I take everything that serves me from different people, including you. And then I make it my way. And that's why I ended up, being a strategist and taking a slightly different approach. But I still, I'm a strategic advisor, and look, you have the strategic advisor part. So obviously, I'm getting influenced by you and other people, like,
Yeah.
the ones that I mentioned.
Yeah, I just, you know, I think it's so important that because there's so much noise out there right now. And I mean, it is literally almost deafening how much content is out there. I mean, it's not like I'm not contributing to it, that's for sure.
You're contributing a lot,
No, no
so.
doubt about that. But you know me, if I it's either like go big or go home.
Yeah.
So, but you know, there's so much of it out there today. And you know, AI just made everything easier, right? And it's figuring out how to like compartmentalize all that information, like you said, the filter, right? And I often think about what's it gonna be like when my 4-year-old is 20. Right. What's it gonna be like then? I mean, I go back to like the I mean, I graduated high school in 95, so I go all the way back then, and there was none of this. None of this stuff existed. Right. I mean, cartoons came on for 1 hour on Saturday, and we only had 3 channels, so that was it. And now everything is on demand today, right? And I don't think it's a bad thing. I think it's something that we have to use with some caution. For
Yeah.
sure.
Yeah. I mean, the things have changed so much, even in my time. So obviously in yours, even like you can see a lot of change more marked too, because I mean, you experienced in the 90s as a teenager, right? Like that's different, right? I was a baby, like I was born in 1993. So I think about this of what you were saying of how to like stand out and things, and one thing that it came out as I discussing with different advisors is and that's why I'm making the emphasis on the authentic authority, because that's what I think that's the name for how to be able to stand out. It's like, how do you display your authenticity in an authoritative way, right? And that's how you can stand out so people see you, oh, he's so authentic, so raw, but also carries authority, which gives you that respect and that credibility. And that's why, you know, I'm very, very big into pushing that of how to display your authentic authority. And that is embedded on the way that I do the strategic plans.
Well, I think there's another dynamic to that, 'cause we talk about authenticity, right? And it's like, why? It's okay to just be who you are, right? And it's funny because I've done like, Jesus, more video in the last year and a half than I've ever done in my life. And it's interesting how the prepped me is so much different than the somebody following me around with a camera me, right? They're just two different people, right? And it's like, why is that? I haven't quite cracked that yet, but why is it so different when we forget a camera's on versus we know the camera's on and we're chatting? Well, I mean, I have some ideas why, but I if we can just be who we 100% are all the time, we'll just click with the right people, right? From a marketing perspective, anyway, right? And everybody else that doesn't like the F-bomb or whatever, right? Go away. I'm not for you, I guess, right? So, but I mean, for the most part, I think I'm fairly clean most of
No,
the
I get it,
time.
'cause I'm the same way. I drop the F bomb all the time, but at the same time I can keep it clean. So it and if they're not if they don't resonate with that, then they're not our people, and that's okay. You know, that's something that I push with people all the time is you don't have to be liked by everybody. And you're not for everybody. It's a big message that I tell people, you're not for everybody, and that's okay. That's it.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, we can't be. It's the old saying goes, if you try to market to everybody, you market to nobody, right? So, staple rule in marketing. And I don't know, I don't really feel like I market to anybody most of the time. And I think if we just put our message out there in the right way, we will attract the right people for us. And you're always going to attract some of the wrong people no matter what. There's lots of psychos
Yes, they are.
out there. The trolls of the internet. There's plenty of them for sure. But yeah, it's, and then on the same note, it's like, why do we have to work hard to be authentic? It should be pretty easy to just be you. Right? At least that's the way I look at it anyway.
Yeah, it's just a matter of sometimes it's not even being authentic, it's how to display your authenticity. And when it comes to also just being authentic, we have sometimes so much shame that has been put into us, programmed to us, let's say by family, by friends, or things like, oh, you shouldn't be doing that. And we help carry those things that we want to, oh, we shouldn't be showing that to the public. That's like an indoors thing, type of thing, right? So being able to embrace being vulnerable and just showing yourself, and know that if some people think that it's not professional or not appealing or whatever, then great, like whatever, like don't look at my content, don't follow me, that's it. But just if this is their friends, then they're not really your friends, so like just cut them out and make new friends that align with your thing, so your authentic self.
Well, it's interesting because somebody was telling me a story not too long ago. And they're like a group of friends, and were in a restaurant, and they hadn't seen each other for like a couple years. So they all hugged and so on and so forth and all that stuff. And then at the end, I mean, they all said, "Hey man, love you," right? And somebody was at another table was like, "What is that? Are you all a bunch of queers?" Right? And it's like, is that where we've gone? Right? Has the pendulum shift so far the other way that human beings can't even display something like that just because they're, two guys? I mean, I gotta tell you, I've got one of my very best friends is a retired Green Beret, and every time we talk, we end with "Love you, bro." I mean, right? We served together for 20 some years and probably saved each other's lives a few times too. And I love him. I love him like a brother, and 100%. I have no shame in that. I don't really get that. So, but anyway, I don't even know why I brought that up, but I just
That's fine. It's a
Woo!
good point. It's a good point to bring anyway. I would say just, hey, if you love somebody, tell them. Life is short. You don't know what's gonna happen. So if you love them, tell them.
That's right, man. That's right. Well, hey, a lot of lessons in what we just talked about, but let's get some pinpoint things here for the hard heads, right? That didn't get it. Us ADHD people that don't get it. We need like the actual input into the brain. So if you had a couple, just a few things that you could tell a business owner, doesn't matter if they're 50 or 20, right? Couple of things help them like miss those arrows in the back. What'd be a couple things you'd like to share?
I want to talk about this three stages that I see with the typical people that I serve, and I think this is something that can serve anybody. And well, because there's three different stages, it will serve people that are in many different stages, right? And ultimately, the last stage is if you want to get seven or even eight figures or beyond, you need to get that to that part. But we'll get into that, right? So the first stage. What I see if somebody that wants to do big shit, let's say, right? Like you want to do big stuff, you want to get first, you need to learn a high income skill or high income skills, right? And that sales, being able to communicate and have something technical that you can start with. So, for example, taxes. Like the reason that I love tax professionals because they solve rich people problems and they pay better, right? So you want to enter to those groups anyway, right? So that's why I love go serving them because then they get me connected with those people. So learn a high income skill, like learn how to save hundreds of thousands of dollars for people that are making a lot of money and how to build wealth while doing it and protecting and also being able to donate to charities and really have like big impact without having to depend with the government to do it for you by paying the taxes, right? Like, so that's what I think. So develop a high income skill like that and expose yourself to people that have the life that you want to have. So work on a company that it's similar to the type of company that you want to run in the future as a contractor and have your own LLC or so to speak, or if you get a W-2 and it works better for you at the time to learn all the skills, great. So it's not just the theory, it's actually go to the field and learn it that way, right? So that's the first stage. So then from there, okay, I've learned enough technical, I am ready doing a lot of volume, I want to move into more leverage work, right? So now that's when you start becoming a business owner. So in this stage, becoming a business owner, this the main thing, the one of the biggest tips that I can give here is one of the greatest ways so you can start getting out of the technical work is position yourself as a trusted business advisor for your clients. Meaning you are positioning since the beginning, hey, I'm going to solve this tax problem for you, but I am actually an advisor that can help you grow beyond this, right? So even since you're doing the service, you're already planting the seed that you can do a lot more for them. It doesn't even have to be you directly. You can use contractors, you can use your network, right? You position yourself as a fractional CFO, a growth partner, an advisor, consultant, whatever you want to go. But it's ultimately being seen as a trusted business advisor, someone that can is trusted and gives advice, right? So you do that transition with that, and you start moving away from the technical work, start hiring contractors. Then maybe if you want W-2s, now that you're growing, great. Now you have bought your time. And now that you have more time, that you're buying back your time, you're developing this business. Now we're going to the third stage, which is the thought leadership stage. Now it's the other, how can I have bigger leverage, right? So now I'm disconnected from client work. I now can even take even a higher leverage position. Look, I'm not even going to be the CEO anymore. I'm going to be the chairman of the company. And I'm going to move now completely into education, coaching, building community, building anything that is like high leverage, where it requires the least amount of your time, but you can impact the most amount of people and have the biggest output, so you can get paid the biggest amount with the little amount of time that you have. That's why content is so big right now, because you create it one time and people can keep consuming it. And then there's the stages, there's podcasts, there's TV, there's all that is that one to many. So in that thought leadership is like, how can I impact as many people as possible? And that's when you go into the heavy on public relations and things like that. And that's why I changed myself from being a service provider to becoming a trusted business advisor. And now that's how I'm moving on. How do I keep buying back my time so then I can move to the thought leadership? And what I see you is you're already kind of moving in that direction, that you're not doing client work anymore, and you're just kind of like in the thought leadership, creating a lot of content, like you said, in the last year. So I think that by showing that journey, I think there's a lot of lessons in there on what I've seen working the best on if you want to impact like seven, eight figures, you know, want to impact a million or even a billion people, like David Mercer says, like impact 1,000 people, that impact 1,000 people each, and those impact 1,000 people, right? That's how you get to a billion people. So there's a lot of lessons there. Hopefully the audience can catch some of them.
Well, that's good. It's good actionable things to follow, really, you know, because we all start somewhere and everybody has to start. Most people have to start at the bottom of the barrel, but, you know, you can move through those stages pretty fast and you can move through them fast, but it takes capital. And that's the key to the machine itself, right? Is the more capital you have, the faster you can scale that, right? And you know, that's why one of the questions I ask people, there's a difference between asking the question of, are you a startup or are you a startup well funded? Right? Well funded to move fast, right? And those are the companies, though. You take tech. Most tech companies, they don't mess around, man. They go out and they go after money right away. And they're not afraid to give up a chunk of their company. And then they just hyper scale fast because they have the money to do it. But they have to. And they have to because whatever that tech product is will be obsolete in the next year. So you've got to push out to market fast, you know, make your money off of it, and then version two comes out. Somebody else kicks out version two. Well, you're screwed. Next tech company, right? And but that's a great model for people to follow. And thanks for sharing that for sure. Good stuff,
Yeah,
man.
and obviously, I mean, there's different directions. I just gave like a
Yeah,
general one
right.
that could cover the most, but I think, I mean, that's what I've seen working really well. And just last thing is in that thought leadership, one great thing is if you build a community, you got your paid community to keep the people that come to your network and keep them there. Then you have an accelerator program or something similar, that have a program where the people that want to take action, they have the money, they can go and put the money and accelerate their 3-year process in just 6 months to a year, so to speak. And then there is the retreats part, which is like in person, let's go to a place and business and pleasure, right? So
Yeah.
those are the three components that I see working extremely well, very scalable, that mixes the one to many, that doesn't require much of your time, but also when you go to retreats, in-person masterminds, conventions, that's when you get that in-person and solidify the real relationship, because you know nothing like shaking a hand in person and having a good time in person, like as I've had with you, and you know how it is. You're big in this, so
Yeah.
obviously.
Oh yeah, I've gotten back into the event space, doing things, doing all that kind of stuff, and man, I gotta tell you what, you don't realize how much you miss something until you've been like out of it for like 3 years, and then you get into it again, it's like, holy shit, man, this is awesome. Right? Because you're back around people again and you're not a hermit in your hole. And I'm not saying anything bad about it. There's plenty of business owners that are hermits in a hole that run successful businesses, right? But I don't choose to just support me, and that's the difference, because I want to feed many mouths off of what I do. And the only way I can really do that is if I'm out shaking hands and kissing babies, right? So, and for me, that's why I don't mind doing it. I didn't used to like doing it, but there again, I went through the phases similar to what you're talking about. Cool. Well, hey, man, how do you want people to connect with you?
Easiest way is to Google me, James L. Fu, or just look at any social media and you'll find me. Or just put my name, James Fu Torres. I'm the only one around. Fu as in like Foo Fighters. So the rest you can figure it out. If not, look it up in the description. The links are gonna be there.
Yeah, for sure. Well, awesome. I love to end the show, and you already know the question because you already been here before, but I love to end the show with asking this question. If you could have invited anybody here today, dead or alive, any point in time, who would have you loved to have here with us, and why them?
Last time, I think I said Alex Hormozi, and I would love to still meet him, so I could bring him. But to say somebody different, I've been following a lot Patrick Bet-David. I really like a conversation with him would be cool, and having a conversation with Joe Rogan also be cool. And then Aubrey Marcus is somebody else that he's in the spiritual but yet entrepreneurial space. And he had a conversation with Alex Hormozi the other day, and it was pretty cool that I really learned a lot from. So any of those three is kind of hard to pick, but if I were to pick one, maybe Joe. I think he has talked to so many people that I feel like he's just like in this compilation of all these interesting conversations that I think it will be really interesting to have a conversation with him.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I'd love to be on his show. That'd be pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah.
I like the guy too. So he's a pretty cool cat. I know a lot of people don't care for him, and they don't, because he is raw and he just says what he thinks, and that's what I do too. So if
Right. He
that's
says, he says, like, what's the point of having fuck you money if you're not gonna do fuck you things, right? So it's
Right. Well,
like,
that's true. That is very true. That's true. Well, awesome, man. Well, thanks for being on the show. As I always say, we all have the same 168. Thanks for stopping by for 37.
thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure to have a conversation with you, especially if we can record it and share it with the world.
Yeah, that's it, man. All right. Peace.
Out.
Thanks for listening to War Room Moments with your host, Jason Miller. Please leave your feedback and visit strategicadvisorboard.com to get the latest and greatest business advisement on the planet. Follow us on social media for updates, and we'll see you on the next episode.